Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the cat's catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest who is also part of the Broadway podcast family, network family with me. John Schwab is the host of an amazing theater podcast named Curtain Call. I've listened to a bunch of his episodes and love what he does. He's also a producer, actor, and director. He's been in a million things you've seen on stage, at the movie theater, on TV. Go look him up. You will be very impressed with that list, but he's also a very big Cats fan, and we are doing this as two parts. So this is part two. Part one was on his show, where we talked a little bit about how this chaotic podcast came to life, and now we're having John on to talk about his show and his fandom with Cats and get into all the craziness. So welcome, and thank you for joining me.
Oh man, Mike, thank you so much. I'm such a fan of your podcast. I'm an original listener. I go back all the way from your single episode, I should say, when it was just you.
Just me.
And I'm really happy to be here. Seriously happy. Thank you for having me.
I love it. I was, I think when the first time we met was during the pandemic when we were doing these monthly meetings, and it was just all the Broadway podcast networks, different hosts were coming on and sharing like, who's doing what with virtual recording? And I kind of joined a couple. They were always during the workday. And so half the time I'm like, can I be at two meetings at once or not? But I remember meeting you the first time, and I know you're in London. Yeah. And I was like, we got people in London. Like, it was just so bizarre for me to be even in that room. And then I remember you saying like, oh, I love your show. I'm like, people listen to this show. Like, I was still so new that I was like, man, that's awesome. So I've been waiting for this for a while now. So I'm glad we're making it happen. But I want to start at the beginning.
Sure.
With you and Cats.
Yeah.
So I know you've seen it many times, but you work in theater, you've done theater, you have a theater podcast. Cats is kind of one of those iconic shows. When was your first viewing?
So my first viewing would have been, we were taken as, there was a production. Now I haven't gone through and done the years, but we lived in, I grew up in Chicago. And we used to get loads of theater through Chicago, and mom and dad took us to the theater. I mean, the reason I'm an actor is because when I think I was maybe 5 or 6 years old, and I saw a production of a kid's production of The Princess and the Pea. And, I remember the mattresses being stacked so high on the stage. And I was like, how does she feel that pea? She left them. It's the right. But I was instantly, into it. But so it would have been a production in Chicago, and I was 8, 9 years old, I think, years old. And I had I had no idea what was going on. I literally had no idea what was going on. I was fascinated by theater. So I was watching the makeup. I wasn't watching relationships. I was watching the lights. I was watching a tire come down from the rafters. I was in a junkyard, that was part of my, what? This is insane.
You were immersed. And then
I was totally immersed. And I think as a 9 year old, seeing that and somebody who was in theater, listen, my parents are always supportive of the arts. And, my sister and both of my sisters and I played in a youth orchestra in Chicago. I did drama, from second grade on. I was always looking to be in the school play, that kind of stuff. So I was already in. Mm-hmm. So, for me, I think I was just looking around. I was looking around, and the Cats, and I was like, oh, this is crazy. This is, they're cats in the audience. And I didn't kind of experience the same thing until I saw The Lion King, at the beginning of the Lion King, but the same kind of feeling of, oh yeah, this is theater. This is theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of one of those shows that it works. I was very hard on kids shouldn't see it at all. Now I'm a mid-teenager, shouldn't see it at all. Kids are fine because it's going to go over their head.
I mean, 12-year-olds. I mean, I can't imagine seeing this as a 12 or 13-year-old boy. Yeah. I would be looking at all the wrong things.
Yes. that is there. It's so sexual, and there are
So you saw it young.
But you've seen a lot of productions over the years, right?
I've seen a few strange productions over the years because I'm a military brat. I've lived all over the world. So when we traveled in Japan, I saw a production in Japan. I saw, I was in Seoul in 2000. When did I, not 2000, in 1993 or four, I saw a production in Seoul. And when I followed my wife to London, and I saw, it was not the Gillian Lynn Theater at that point, it was the New London Theater, I saw that production. So I have seen a fair few, and so then I've also,
Was that the production with the street tugger? With the rapping hip-hop tugger?
Now, listen, this was in, when did I see it? 1990.
Okay, so this is before,
No, this is before, Okay. Because that was 20...
It was in the, sometime.
Teens.
20-teens, 2000.
Yes, no, yeah, it wasn't. So
12,
I was in the,
something like that.
At that point, that was the relaunched theater.
Yeah.
So I saw it, it was like in 2000, maybe 2000.
Okay.
So 2002. So it was, because I think that production closed in 2004. But I saw that at the New London Theater, because I was in the West End at that time. And what I would do is when I had a matinee day off, I would go and watch a production, because we knew all, in those days, all the box office managers knew everybody else. So we went to see everything for free. So if you had a matinee, you can go, they would go, hey, you want to go see Cats?
I'm like, pop in.
You just pop in and they just walk you through. So I saw that production, which was fascinating. I love that stage. The New London Theater, which is now the Gillian Lynn Theater. It's a great, great stage.
Yeah. So you've seen it in different languages too. So I want to go back to, it's Japanese, right? They do it in Japanese?
Japanese and which I knew a bit of Japanese, but I didn't get that was much more. I was 16, 17 at that point, and and I was just like, these cats are hot, you know, these this is amazing. These cats are incredible. And then I was 19, 20 when I saw it in Korea, and that was the first time when I saw it in Seoul, Korea. It was a local production. It was in Korean. And I couldn't understand anything. I didn't know much Korean at all. I knew a bit of Japanese, but I didn't know much Korean. It was the first time, like, I thought I really saw a musical transcend language. It was much more about the language of the cat. So I was trying to figure out, again, I knew nothing of the plot, Mike. I knew nothing of the plot. I was still as confused as ever, although I started seeing cats kind of paired up. And you'd see them travel across the stage together, and you'd see somebody defending this cat or defending, like pushing cats away. And I was like, what? I've never noticed that before. What's going on there? But seeing it in different language, they had different names.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, in Japan and Korean, they don't have certain consonants. So they would have slightly different names and just to make them scan within the meter and rhyme of the others. But Grisabella was always, you know, the one that went, and you know who Old Deuteronomy was, and Rum Tum Tugger, and you know the major cats, but you didn't really work out who was doing what. It was still madness.
I think there's a big reason why it's sustained so long and it's been able to perform all over the world is because you can make those tweaks and put it in a different language, and the story's so loose that it's fine. And, you know, I remember seeing a lot of international people in the theater with me in New York. And I was like, this is the smartest show to go see because you don't need to follow it to enjoy it. You can just watch some dancing and be happy. But I did just record with somebody, and I think it's the most recent episode that has come out based on when this will release, with someone who did in Mexico. And they just, when they changed the names, they just also just described some of the cats. So it's like, Cat Train instead of Skimbleshanks, and like Buster Jones is like I think it was Gordito Cruz
Posh
or
cat.
Something where it's just like it's just fat cat basically.
Gordito, I love it.
Yeah. And so they changed some of them where they just almost described it. I was like, you could do that because it's Mr. Mistopheles and Bam Ballerina. Like the names are ridiculous to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's easy to make those tweaks and still have the same level of entertainment of the show. You're not ruining the core of this family drama, tribe, and redemption story that you get.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting. The point you're making there is like I've lived in London now for 30 years, or the UK for 30 years. And that's kind of really I guess my cultural sensibilities now are very English. And when you go back and listen to it, like Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer sound like the Cat's personalities. Bustopher Jones is a very posh name. It's like you can imagine somebody that comes from a massive 300-acre estate naming their child Bustopher. You know, and so you get that, growl tiger is a, you get, it says, it kind of feels, and that's mm-hmm. T.S. Eliot's genius as well. I mean, amazing. So you get that, but I did have one thought just come to me when I was talking about the Korean, production that I saw done in Korean. There was a very famous, I apologize if that person's listening, I'm not going to remember her name. She was a local, artist, actor, and I think she was a famous television actor doing this. She was incredible, but she was the most glamorous Grisabella I have ever seen. You could see she was like, there's
not
no
rough
way
and tumble at all.
I'm
yeah.
not rough and tumbling. She was so beautiful. Like, it was ridiculous.
It's fun to hear that, because there are those nuances. There's a lot of young Grisabellas now, which I'm like, a 23-year-old, as great of an actress you can be, it's still going to be hard to be like, it's time. Like, you've lived a worn life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's, I think it's cool, because they don't generally have to stunt cast this, but they can for a Grisabella or especially dancers, Mephistopheles, you can do that. So that was the last time. When was the last time you saw it?
Well, okay. So I have seen, like, since, you know, I watched the 1998 movie. I have a really interesting kind of take on that. But I did see the 2019 film.
But you haven't seen a stage version in a while.
I haven't seen a stage version for a long time. Now, okay. This is terrible. Like, I'm being a bit of a snob here, and I'm going to call myself out, because sometimes you have to call yourself out.
Yeah.
I didn't see Nicole Scherzinger do it. I didn't see that. And I should have.
Yeah.
That was when we were doing the curtain call book and all that kind of stuff. We'll talk about it later. But, it was just, I was so, so busy. And then I just went, oh, you know what? Okay, I've missed that. Maybe I'll see it soon. I would love to see it again. I would love to, I don't think my wife has ever seen it on stage. I cannot wait to take her I can't wait to watch her watching it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't seen it for a while.
Okay. So the reason I asked is because you then start listening to my show in 2019, 2020.
Yeah.
I clearly in the beginning don't know anything, but it's been years since you're watching it. So I'm a little fascinated, like what were the, as you listened to episodes, were like, whoa, I never knew that. I would have never thought that. Like, what were some of those aha moments for you about Cats?
Okay. Like the biggest thing for me, was the interrelationships and the relationships of, this is brothers, sister, sister, and brother, or these guys are sisters, or these two are sisters. This is Jenny Annie Dots the mother of all these? And you go, what? You know, or did old Deuteronomy and Grisabella have a relationship? You know, and you're like, well, I never thought of these relationships. And it's interesting to hear some of the guests go, oh, we don't tell anybody that. It's not kind of specific. Yeah. This is what we're playing. And you go, oh my, my mind is consistently blown, you know, constantly blown by your guests going, oh yeah, I decided to say, oh, I think, you know, Mungo Jerry and had a little crush on Victoria. You're like, wow, what? You know, it's just crazy.
It's fascinating to me, because you listen to it a different way than even I do. Like, for my own show, I'm listening to it going, ooh, wait, if that is true, then this could be true. And I'm like trying to put together the family tree. And I hear you listen to it, and it's like, as an actor and a performer, you're like, wow, this is a really interesting behind the scenes take of how someone is honing their craft. And so it's like,
absolutely,
multiple people are listening to this differently. And I think that's what a cool part about this show is, being able to collect and document that history, but also be able to give different pieces of it. Like, there are the super fans who are adamant that this is the relationship here. And then a performer is like, that's not how we played it. But then there's also this, like, I'm about to go do Cats, go listen and figure out how someone else tackled it.
100%. And I said this on our episode on my podcast. Like, what I find about the Wrong Cat Died podcast so interesting is that, exactly that, Mike, is that I listened to it as a performer who is going, what is your process? And what did you find to mine a certain moment? Because there are moments that you see or that I remember now. Something go, I remember that look. Or the cats being really nasty to each other in the corner over here going, why did they do that? Why did they hiss when that person came? Or person, again, I'm anthropomorphizing cats. Why did that cat not want that character to come over? Or and it's, you know, I never understood the Grisabella moment where they were just so horrible to her. It's like cats, actually, I know cats. I'm not a cat person, you know, in life. I'm a dog person. And I mean, cats would rob you blind if they had hands, man. They would, they would take everything.
Yeah, but, for sure.
So, but for me, going back, sorry, I'm just all over the place. What I found, and what I find interesting and is that there's not one moment from any of your guests who are on stage going, what am I doing here? And I, as an actor, that is one of the most crucial things. I listened to a story. It's probably Ian McKellen, who was the last person I saw perform something from Cats Live. And I'll tell you about it in a second. But he was talking about, there was a soldier on a Shakespeare, Royal Shakespeare Company, play, and they were doing Henry V or something. It was the, you know, before the Once More to the Breach. And there's a soldier the night before when Henry's telling jokes and things, and he's sitting on the side of the stage, and he said, you know, went up to him and said, so what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm just kind of not much right at the moment. I don't think this person's doing much. He's like, no, he's thinking about every meal he's had with his mother because it could be. And he just had this whole thing. And I was like,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So when I hear your guests talk about their journey in the show on Cats, it that's why I love each episode. I'm going, oh, I remember that little moment or that, you know, that Grisabella not wanting to get up on the tire. You know, what is it? Or people pushing. It's just, yeah, I love it.
And for me, it's different almost every time. I can talk to two different Grisabellas and get two semi-different answers at times. Or it's like, I love asking, there's no answer to where does Grisabella go when she leaves the tribe, right? Yeah. There's no real answer to that. Some people have full on, I've thought this through word for word of where they went. And other people are like, nah, I didn't really need that to go do my next part of the show. And that is interesting, but I want to hear, I know, which episodes like stand out for you, because I got 150 of them now.
I know. So my favorite ones were, we were just talking about Soul, and you had an episode with, I think a guy called Benjamin, and it wasn't so long ago, say a couple years ago, this episode, and it was about their lockdown journey. And it was fascinating because he was in Australia, wasn't he? He was doing the Australian
Ben Colley, Benjamin Colley.
That's the guy. And he got asked to go to Korea to do it. And he's like, oh, they're doing it. And it was the he talks about going to Seoul. And because they had to quarantine, he was locked up for 2 weeks. And he said it was just the only view he had was the outside of his window. And that absolutely resonated with me because I was filming Jack Ryan, or no, I was filming Das Boot or something like that during that, but where I had to go in quarantine in Prague, and it was me and one other guy in a hotel with 200 rooms. And I thought I was going insane. It was like The Shining. They turned all the lights off in the hotel, except when we left, the lights would come on and we'd go to breakfast and they'd make us breakfast for whatever. So, and it was his then going into the rehearsal room and having to be next to people and going crawling all over people. I know it sounds pat and everything else, but I got chill bumps and like really got emotional listening to that episode. Cause it took me straight back to that moment of going, that human need of connection.
Yeah.
When I got out of that hotel and got on a plane to Malta and was met by some of the cast members I'd worked with the previous year, I was like in floods of tears going. And so that episode brought me back. I love your parody song.
Did you listen to the one with Dory and Sammy? So Dory Berenstain, who's the other?
I've listened to all of them. Yeah.
Sammy,
because she's directing. Who worked on, that's right.
They made a movie about it.
Yes, they made the movie.
Really, really interesting to watch that. Because like what Benjamin was able to tell I get to watch in
Exactly.
Sammy's and Dory's movie.
The show must go on that thing.
And Sammy's incredible. She's doing How to Dance in Ohio, and they're fascinating. But that movie was really interesting because it was that and Phantom kind of going on at the same time. Really beautiful. I mean, just incredible movie.
And listen, say what you want about Andrew Lloyd Webber. Like, he busted his ass to make sure the theater industry did not implode. Over, not just over here in London or in the States, but in, you know, by putting on Phantom in the Far East, by putting on Cats and Soul, he was like, guys, we can do this.
Yeah.
You know, we can do this. I loved your parody song about exactly that, about coming back. I was like, oh, you got your own parody song, beautifully sung. There's one of my, I've got two more.
Okay.
And it's somebody who, now, I may have got this wrong because it's about, but I remember it's Emma Camarez or something like that. She didn't get into Cats. And her audition story is one of the best stories about just going balls out. And, you know, and she wore her her white unitard and the tiger onesie. And
went and all in.
All in. And, you know, spoiler alert, didn't get it.
Yeah.
And, but what she was true to herself. Now, again, I really connect with the guests because of their journeys. And she, I only play certain degrees of me, Mike. I'm not that, you know, when casting directors cast me, they know they get a certain, oh, we need John Schwab for this. You know, we need a guy that can do. And so I that's what I go in with. You know, it's when I try and be somebody else that I stick out like a sore thumb and I'm not believable. And that's cool. When she was saying she was stretching backstage before going on and she was crying real tears, I get like chill bumps. I'm literally getting emotional talking about it because I've been there, man.
Yeah.
I've been there going, I was me and I did everything.
She's such an interesting part of what we talked about on your show, which is a lot of my guests are kind of sent to me by some other people. Like, hey, I talked to this person, then they said talk to this person. And so she was really good friends with a lot of the cast from 2016 and a couple of people like Colin Cunliffe, who's about to be in Cabaret, and it was Skimbleshanks. And they were like, you got to talk to her. Her story's wild. And she came on with the best humor of it. She was on a TV show at the time too. She was so fun about it. She went through the emotional grief of not getting it probably, and then was able to look back in humor. And I love those conversations because it's a different angle of the show where it's like somebody else who still like wanted to be Victoria.
Yeah.
Didn't get it, but here's how they went about it. And so it's fun to hear that those are fun.
It's almost like the story, her story is fascinating. You have to listen to the episode because you can hear the whispers in the wings, right?
Yeah.
She has people texting her going, have you heard from other shows? Because news travels fast in our business, man. Look, I was on stage once in a really bad musical called The Concert They Never Gave, right? And it was a concert. It was a thing. It was Elvis, Roy Orbison, Buddy Holly, and Eddie Cochran, right? And so we had all three. Our Elvis decided to get drunk. Like, we were up in Aberdeen, Scotland. And I know this is off topic, but this is hilarious. He decides to kind of have, before the show, he's got some Jack Daniels and he offers me and my mate, Bob. And they're like, no, man, we're good. We got to go and dance. We got to go dance and sing and everything else. We hear him do his first song, All Shook Up, and he can't really sing. And he can't remember the words. And Bob and I look at each other and we're like, oh my God, we're in trouble. We're in trouble here. And listen, man, audiences in England, audiences in Scotland love their music. We get to American Trilogy and they've had enough and they start slow clapping off. And we're trying to sing BVs. Oh, I wish it was, you know, we're going, ooh, looking at each other.
Yeah.
Look, what's going on? And by the time the show ends, 15 minutes after that, and they do it, he doesn't come back for the encore, which is our biggest cheer of the night from the audience. And by the time we come off stage, we have 100 messages on our phones And they're going, what the hell has happened up at His Majesty's Theater, Aberdeen?
Yeah.
We hear that Clayton, you know, by the headlines of the local papers the next day, Aberdeen Angus said, boo suede shoes. And I know.
Clever.
I know.
It's clever.
Clever, very clever. But, and so I had to go on as Elvis for the rest of the week, and it was this thing. But the long story of a short point is that it's the story off the stage. Like, everybody knew Emma's story that she wasn't able to say before it even happened. And it was kind of that your heart hurts for her in this, but also, you know, it ends up happy. It's a happy story. Yeah. She goes on and gets a great role in another massive musical and created a role.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It's fun to hear different versions and parts of this, because, you know, at some point there's only so much to say about Grisabella, Bon Ballerina, right?
Yeah.
Everyone has a different process of how they created it, a slightly different backstory, the nuances of tours and regional productions and all this other stuff where stuff doesn't go right every night. Like, it is live, and or a version like that where she's not there, or the DJ John Michael who works at Peloton and, you know,
yes,
like loves
that's a great
like
episode
like,
man
stuff like that just I think yeah. is really fun, because it's touched a lot of people in different ways, and it's fun to hear those different stories.
Yeah. My last one, I'll give you one last one, and it's very quick, and it is the episode, and I think I mentioned, we talked a little bit before, and I can't remember her name, but it's she was cast as Grisabella, and she got a fear of heights, and she had never had a fear of heights before. She'd been up and down ladders, but she just couldn't make that journey from the rafters down, and it was how the company rallied around her. Again, as a performer, as somebody who loves to be part of a company, that just made me so happy. Like, and they just found a role for her, and they just kind of came around, and ALW and his company found her different roles in different music, because they felt so bad.
Yeah.
But it was wonderful. It's a great episode again.
Yeah. I think that was Catherine Heaton. I think that's who it was. Who did Phantom and did all kinds
of
stuff.
Yes, exactly. She went and did Phantom. Yeah. Yeah.
Super awesome.
Loved it. It's a great episode.
Well, such weird, not weird, but like unique stories of the show.
Yeah.
And then I love that she was able to still find a way to do it, because it was still somewhat of a happy ending.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back for more of The Wrong Cat Died.
I want to talk a little bit about your show, because this another theater show. This is a theater podcast, so we have a lot of, you know, crossover type of listeners. But
yeah,
you've been doing it for a while now, and it, you know, you've had an evolution of it. So, you know, we were talking before about how some of it was listening backstage and all these different pieces to what it is with interviews and what it is today. So tell my listeners a little bit about what your show's about, how it's evolved, and what to expect.
Yeah, sure thing. So Curtain Call podcast started out almost by accident. It's kind of the same, almost where lightning struck. I basically was going through some old photographs, and I was in the Renew Shakespeare Company here in London for a long time, on and off for, I think, oh my God, 11 years. But I was never in that show for that long, but you dip back in and out and they bring you back in. But a friend of mine, photographer, had come back and taken some backstage photographs. And when we were thinking about moving house and stuff like that, we were going through some stuff. And my son said, oh, what's that? And I went, oh, that was me backstage. And that's you. You're there.
Yeah.
That's a picture of you backstage. And he went, oh, do you have any more pictures? And I went, no, I don't have any more. Why don't I have any more pictures like this backstage? And why isn't there? Yeah. I've got to do it. I want to do a book. I want to do a book where we go over a year backstage in London theater from my point of view, like what it looks like standing in the wings. And so I went out to a photographer friend of mine who I met at the Old Vic. I was on stage and he was backstage. He was a flyman, and he was already taking the most incredible photographs of people coming off stage. You know, he's got a picture of Rebecca Hall covered in blood. You know, there was no one I could go to other than him. And we started this book. We were going to make this book, and we thought if they had 12 shows that say yes, we'll do that. So we started with Urinetown, did 39 Steps, quickly started kind of doing some of the musicals. And, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory said, you'll never do, you know, we'll never let you, Matilda, you'll never get backstage doing this. And we got a lot of no's, and we're like, fine, like, it's okay, it's okay.
Fine,
And it's fine. And but as a result, because we knew it was just going to be a picture book, we had to have some copy to go with it. So it's like, what I'll do is I'll record all of the creatives and cast while the show's going on or before. And so we have an archive of audio to then I'll just transcribe. And so we went to, like you just said, you know, 60 shows. I went to 64 shows, I think we did that year, which we went to twice, once to watch and once to cover.
Wow.
So I spent 130 nights at the theater that year. And we, I mean, listen, I talked to everybody, you know, everybody, Imelda Staunton and Michael C. Hall and, you know, just people that I've loved, Olivia Colman, you know, it's just like, yes, these are my heroes. And I get to talk to them about being an actor backstage. And it was oftentimes during the show. So you'd hear the tannoy going and the show would be on and I'd be talking to them for five. I only did like 5 minute interviews unless it was, we did it during the half and I'd do a slightly longer one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the book was published and we went, we've got all this audio. Why are we sitting on it? Let's put some shows together. And that's what started it. So I would put together compilations. I always ask the people the same question. So you'd have these wonderful shows of people and you hear the show going, it felt like you were backstage during the show. And then, so we just kind of continued that. And again, we thought we would do it for, I don't know, a few dozen episodes. And now we're on episode 180.
Yeah.
Within that, we've also done specific shows like Welcome to the Rock, which was a Come From Away podcast series. We've done Take Your Bow during COVID. So people who didn't normally get a spotlight shot on them. You know, dressers and actors who wanted a bit of a buzz. We also did the ghost shows, which is one of my favorite series we'd ever done here. And that was when all the shows that closed down, when everything got cut off. And so all these people who were just about to go and do the show, they spent, you know, it was then their first West End debut or this their first opera show. And to be then told, no. You not only are you not going to do the show, you can't travel.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to stay where you are for the next 3 months. And it was, you know, so anyway, that's kind of where we are. And it's just, I continue to do that. And I, you know, wanting to talk to you, I just love people who are involved in this industry, whether they're run a podcast or they're a director. You know, I've got to talk to the people I've talked to are from directors, producers, all the way down to dressers, and the person who's worked the longest at the English National Opera is a spotlight operator, and he's got his own episode, you know. And I think that's really, really interesting to me, at least. And we have a good audience, so I appreciate. Thank you to everybody who listens.
Yeah, I think what I love about your show is I love the fact that it is recorded backstage, especially in the earlier episodes. You can hear it, and that's like such a unique piece to it versus the like. What do you remember sitting in your apartment or like as we meet up about this and we're looking back versus in it and like truly immersed in it? I think you get a different set of answers than if you would go back a year later or 6 months later or even on an off day versus like they just came off stage. So I love that. And then I do think there's a lot and there's not a ton of shows that fully immerse into it, but there's a lot of people that are fascinated by behind the scenes, like what actually does it take to put a show on? And it's not just you hear the controversies or the stuff that pops up in the news. Like I thought about like Here Lies Love, where they had the whole union issue with the musicians. I always knew there was a lot of musicians on the show and, you know, but you don't see them, you know, they get their, they get their little bow at the end. They get the clap at the end, but I've now gotten to experience some of that and it's fascinating and you shine a light on those stories. And then I also love that you have talked a little bit sometimes in our meetings about how your show does really well at universities because you can shine you can give a different format to still complement a study of Shakespeare or something that's a little bit more, you know, of a traditional, probably something that a college kid or a high school kid doesn't want to be reading. So you bring another angle to it that's a little bit more entertaining than reading the text.
Absolutely. So we do A Bridge Too Far, which is this crazy, like you say, that came into the Broadway Podcast Network last November, and we just do. I got a fantastic writer who is writes for the BBC, writes for a lot of comedians, and we just take texts that we were forced to read, like The Scarlet Letter, you know, which is literally the ultimate slut-shaming classic piece of literature. I mean, it is ridiculous that they force us to read this, where people just, these Puritans who are meant to be wonderful people and God-fearing, but also forgiving, not very much.
Yeah.
We just take these long texts and we make them less than 20 minutes long, 22 minutes and 37 seconds, I think we call it. But and they are, schools have now started to go, hey, listen, my 15-year-old would not read War of the Worlds, but he's listened to your podcast. So,
yeah,
that's kind of a, that's also fun, Mike. It really is, man. It's good fun.
Yeah, I love the, you know, this is, podcast is still such a unique form that I would still argue is in its infancy. Like, it's still kind of really starting to figure out. But there have been some really cool, fun platforms that have popped up out of this that I don't think I would have expected and might not have worked in another medium. Like, I'm not sure my show works unless I either fine-tune it into a stand-up, you know?
Or
like, I'm not sure it's a video. Like, I'm not sure people want to watch us do the interview. But it works in this format because it is an interesting thing you can do. I think you said one time you were like cutting the grass or I'm on the subway you know, like it's just kind of good a way to have, like, I listen to podcasts a lot when I travel for work on planes and that always doesn't work in other places. So I do think the format's growing. It's going to be an interesting time with it, but it's cool to what it can do because it can do educational, purely entertainment. Or like curated. I know the our network has a ton of these new like radio plays and like full on stories being told. And those are also super fun in a different format. But
I love the fact that we're going back to that. That was our entertainment in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah,
and as people look, I believe that we're slowly regressing back into our caves. Like you could literally live your life with never getting out of your cave. So the audio format is great. And listen, go and listen to, there are some great podcasts, Rob Lowe's Literally and Smartless. And you have a lot of Mark Maron and Armchair Experts, you know, where their celebrities have their celebrity podcasts. What I love about podcasts like The Wrong Cat Died is you don't know the people coming on it. I want real people. I want to listen to real people. I don't want to listen to the rarefied air in the studio, you know, but I honestly want the grit and grime and go, what are the real people doing? That's why I believe it's in its infancy. And I think some of these podcasts stick out are the real thing.
Yeah. I love it. All right. This has been fun. I want to do the rapid fire. We got to go back to Cats now.
Okay. Okay.
So if you could perform in Cats,
yes,
who would you want to perform as?
That's a really good question. Okay, so I have been, I have been playing a lot of bad guys, like really not nice people and recently in some of the shows I've been doing, just is all, and because they're always quite fun to play. So I'm thinking maybe McCavity, like, or, you know, somebody who's just stirring it up and being the kind of the arsehole in it all, you know?
Yeah.
So McCavity, who's, he like steers it and he's never there. He's like, he can do things and he's like, hey, he's the guy that kind of goes, hey man, your wife was looking at this guy and then walks away, you know? And so they're always fun to play. You
got the experience, you're ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's in your future.
Yeah. I've got to get some stretching going on.
If you don't want to do that, then do Gus. Then you can just kind of.
Yeah. See, oh yeah. So can I go back to Gus quickly? I saw Ian McKellen's one-man show that he toured around. He has toured and played in every theater he's ever played in the UK for his 75th birthday. I think he did that. So he went around and did one night only. It was called for one night, Ian McKellen for one night only. And the last piece of Cats I've heard saying, he did Gus because he played Gus in the movie, didn't he?
Yeah.
And it was phenomenal. It was
so one of the
good
parts of that movie I liked. He did a great job in it.
Agree. But imagine him singing it without any cat makeup, without anything, and him just going, this is a story. And it was just, amazing.
That is
so awesome. It would be Gus, but we'll get to that.
Okay. Who are your favorite and least favorite characters in the show?
I think I love Rum Tum Tugger. I mean, it's gonna be a, it's gonna be like an obvious choice only because he's just so much fun. It's like, he literally is like a ball of energy. And every time I've seen it on stage, you knew Rum Tum Tugger just because of the song and everything.
Yeah.
And he's just in people's face and loving it. I love that. I think Bumble Arena as well.
I was gonna say, the teenage you like the Macavity song?
I love the Macavity. Just, you know, because he's also being talked about. He's being sung about.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like he's got his own, all the cats have their own theme music. They do have themes, but he, these, some cats that aren't singing about themselves, you know, they have, they're being, hey, check me out. I've got my own theme tune. Yeah, absolutely. I love the Macavity song.
Any dislikes? Favorite?
Yeah. I think, again, it's so obvious, but I never like Bustopher Jones.
Yeah.
I don't like the air of entitlement. It really is a horrible stench. And it's, if it played right, you can go immediately when the cat walks in, like big, like just, I am so the thing, you know? And it's, I think, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but in the movie, the new movie, is he part of the gang? He's played by
James Corden.
James Corden.
There was some decisions made on that character in the new movie.
We could talk about that off air as well.
That's a whole separate conversation.
But I didn't like it. But
it's a common answer because he's also cut from the Royal Caribbean Cruise 90-minute production. It's also though Gus. So Gus, the same actor, plays usually an ensemble dancer, then Bustopher Jones, then Gus.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of the, you know, you can
make sense that you can get
dislike
rid of him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Favorite song from the show?
Oh, okay. It goes. I love Gus's song. I love Gus's song, because it and. I love I love Gus's song because it tells his story about how proud he was. Mm-hmm. And like, that makes me, you know, that is me. Like, you know, my wife and I were just talking about this the other day and she said, you know, you used to have a real thing about legacy. When you first started out, you were so worried about doing something that people would remember you for, or that you'd have your name somewhere that people could, this is pre IMDb. You and I started pre Broadway world, you know, so it was like, I just want people to remember. And for Gus to talk about his Fry Fro Fiddle, you know, and, you know, it just, and being so proud of it.
As an actor, that's such a song for you too, because it's all about.
Maybe one day, putting it out there, I can maybe one day when I'm 70, I can go play Gus.
Well, when we do our production where we have a different cat every night, you'll get your Jellicle chance.
Yeah, I can get my, but also as a piece of music, like, because I'm also a musician behind music, you not see this, but I think the Jellicle Ball is like, as a piece of music, is something phenomenal with all of the things in it. It just, it's crazy mad. So, I mean,
that and the
as much as he can
too,
write, you know, the overture, he can, look, ALW can absolutely write a tune. He's brilliant. You come out, I'll be controversial here. I did not like Cinderella, and I had a friend in it, Georgia. I love you. But it just, I didn't come out humming anything. But, you know, Sunset Boulevard, you were humming, you know, da 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 da. You know, come out of Cats, you're even if it's just the opening to the drop of da 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 da, you hear that. That is just a lovely thing that you're going to hum all the way home. So, yeah, the Jellicle Ball, the overture, just, naming of the cats always freaked me out.
Yeah.
Always freaks me out.
That and the end, the addressing of cats are the two.
The addressing of cats, the same.
I'm like, the end, just end it with the I remember seeing it.
If you would have taken a picture of me actually watching that as a kid, I'd be like that. Because I didn't know what these guys were going to do.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. My last fun one before we get to the important one.
Sure.
I know you've been, one of your credits is you were in the Queen's Gambit.
Yeah.
And so I want to ask, which cat do you think would be the best chess master?
Oh, that is such a good question, Mike. You're really good at this. Okay. If I would think Old Deuteronomy, because he has powers. He could kind of work out. He could see all the different machinations of the person. He would be, I'm pretty sure old Deuteronomy plays chess. I'm pretty sure he does.
Yeah.
However, the fact that you mentioned Queen's Gambit, I think Victoria is one of the most, as if coming of age, as somebody who doesn't believe in her, you know, it, like she's got something the world wants. In fact, she, yeah. Oh my gosh, just thinking about this, the last scene in Queen's Gambit, Anya Taylor-Joy is dressed all in white as the white queen. Like that could be Victoria, you know?
Why not? I love the parallel. So I think there's a different answer to this question, which I like the Victoria Queen's Gambit kind of like. That's a fun parallel.
Yeah.
I think there's the twins, which is this is where I didn't know this until probably 20 episodes in.
Okay.
But the twins have this like, they're the ones that before something happens, they turn. So I think they have this power that they're going to know your moves before you do. So it's Tantamount and Corkopat.
Right.
I think they're the ones. They're probably hustling everybody in Washington Square Park just because they know everything you're doing next before you do.
I love that. That's very good. The twins, one gets in, one gets... That's very good.
They're ready to go.
This is why, that's why you're hosting this podcast.
Yeah. This is why we're 150 plus episodes in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Most important question. You know it's coming.
Yeah.
I've argued at length against Grisabella. Are you going to defend her or are you going to pick somebody else?
I am not going to defend Grisabella because I don't know if it is Grisabella, okay? You've recently argued this in one of your podcasts, and I have two issues. I would love it to be Gus. Like, he is my favorite cat in the thing. I just love Gus. I think I would love to see Gus. And where they go once they're taking the Heaviside Lair, how many lives has he had? I'm not sure. Can he come back and have another crack at this acting game, which he so loves, right? I love that idea that Gus, it could be Gus. We don't really know what Grisabella does to piss everybody off so bad. Like, she could be horrible and she may, you know, we really don't know. My thing, I don't understand why old Deuteronomy holds all the cards. It really, yeah. I kind of, now that I've listened to your podcast enough, and now where I've gone back and I actually watched a few clips from the movie. What you don't get though when you're watching the movie on the 1998 movie is you only get to see what the director wants you to see. And you don't get to see all the things that are happening around. But old Deuteronomy, why does he get to, and why isn't it him? Why does it, can it not be old Deuteronomy, Mike?
That's a good question. I think eventually it has to be him, right? Like that's,
it has to be him.
Otherwise you're not grooming Monkish Trap for nothing.
But exactly.
We only get one night. We only get one piece of this puzzle. So
yeah,
he is I think he's number three in votes right now.
Oh,
behind
is he?
Grisabella and Gus.
Well, Gus is my number one. For me, I've kind of, old Deuteronomy, everybody goes like, oh, he's so great. And what it alludes to me is like, it's somebody who is given power, who now has the power and goes, I don't care what you all think, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I can be whoever I want. And like, and you just point, because it also goes to me is like, why hasn't it been Grisabella yet? Like if she was ready and no one likes her, he's actually a little bit of a sadist by not letting her go before.
Yeah. I do feel like this is a cult at the end of the day. And it has very much like, if you get into some of the, I mean, there's a lot of documentaries now. There's popping up left and right on streaming sites like Netflix. And if you watch some of them, I'm like, this could be the Jellicles. Like, you got a leader who's sacrificing somebody, like convincing them to do this. Like, you got all these different personalities that all kind of buy into the same ritual.
Yeah.
It's there. That angle is there.
Yeah. And it's who's following who. Oh my gosh. I'm forgetting the name now. Who is it that when they dance, everyone sways with them as well? There's a part. Gosh, there's a part in the movie where everybody does the same dances. I don't know if it.
I don't know.
I'm forgetting. Anyway, I don't think it's Monk's Trap, but it's not. It's anyway. There's a moment,
okay.
and where they're all, there's somebody on the platform in the junkyard and they're he's almost controlling their movements. Anyway, I need to go see it live again. I need to go see it live. This is it. Exactly. This is me saying I need to go see it again.
Well, you can hop on a cruise. I'm sure it was in Europe for a while. There's versions for us. So this has been so fun. How can people stay in touch with you? Social media, what you're doing, the shows, the podcasts. I'll link everything to.
Absolutely. Well, you know, if you want personally, my socials are at John Schwab, just my name on, you know, there is a John Schwab out there who is a musician, but he's older and he didn't really know that John, you know, social media was a thing before. So I got all the John Schwabs. Yeah. So on X and Insta and everything else, Threads at John Schwab. The Curtain Call podcast, at Curtain Call, on all of those. And you can listen to Curtain Call podcast, A Bridge Too Far on Broadway Podcast Network. I have another podcast called Cinema Sounds and Secrets, that's out. And, listen, I think when this airs, I will have just been seen in Masters of the Air on Apple TV.
Okay.
So awesome. That's kind of the next thing that's coming out.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we'll link everything too. And then the other part is this was two parts. So this was part two.
Yeah.
Part one
and
is
go
on
listen to the
call.
First part. Yeah. Go listen about Mike's origin story is incredible, people. So go and listen to part one. And Mike, thank you so much for having me on, man. I adore your podcast. I think it's brilliant. And there are so many more stories to come. I told you when we were setting this up that I think they're going to mention you when ALW does kick the bucket. You're going to be in his obit, man.
I'm gonna say the wrong Andrew LeWeber died. It's been so fun, and I love, like, you know, we've talked for years now at these meetings, and it's fun to really kind of dive deeper. And I'm sure I'll see you at the next one. We still check out all the Broadway Podcast Network shows too.
Absolutely.
There's some really great theater stuff on there.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been a blast. So thank you. And thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and TikTok at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, TheWrongCatDied.com.
Have you ever wondered how your favorite performer actually feels? Well, here's your chance. Welcome to The Quiet Part Out Loud with me, Bobby Steggert, Broadway actor, and now a therapist to a whole host of Broadway creatives. Part interview, part therapy, this is not your typical podcast. We'll go right to the heart of things with some of your favorite artists, what they still struggle with, what lessons they've learned, what they haven't figured out yet. There's enormous power in saying the quiet part out loud. Are you listening?
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.